This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. A couple of weeks ago, an apartment building opened up in the Corktown neighborhood in Detroit, right where Tiger Stadium used to stand. And here's the thing. The apartment building looks a lot like a lot of other apartment buildings I've seen built in the last 5 years. You can see them in Detroit, Grand Rapids. There are a couple in Lansing, East Lansing. And I'm not the only person to notice this new architectural style. Justin Fox has too. He's a columnist with Bloomberg, and he wrote about it, and he joins us now. Justin, welcome.
Great to be talking to you.
So you write that these same kind of apartment buildings are popping up all across the nation. Describe what a typical downtown version of this type of building looks like.
It's five stories, sometimes up to seven, especially on the West Coast. It often fills up an entire block. Tends to be very boxy. This really varies by region, but in a lot of places, there's a lot of use of bright colors, sometimes to sort of break up the facade. Although in certain parts of the country, like in Texas and in a lot of the Midwest, although that Corktown building, I couldn't totally tell what they covered it with, but brick facades are common too. And out in the West Coast, it's always stucco, but often with bright colors. There's usually, at least if it's downtown, there's probably restaurants or other shops in the ground floor, or at least space intended for that. A lot of developers complain that they can't actually rent that space out, but the cities want them to do it.
What I see is big colored squares on a board game, or maybe it's like a scattered Rubik's Cube or something like that. Now, what do you call this architectural style?
I drove across the country last fall, and that's when I first started realizing that these things were everywhere. And I, you know, in terms of architectural style, there's a guy who called them, writing about some developments in Washington, called them fast casual, which I sort of like, but he actually was referring to a somewhat different kind of building. And when I started asking around, what it turned out to be the thing that they most have in common is actually the part that you can't see, which is that they're made of lightweight wood frames, basically the way single-family houses are.
Right. This whole new, or not new, actually, it's 150 years old, but it's a different kind of construction being used. So how does this differ from what we used to use in materials and in building style?
Well, you know, apartment buildings were usually in cities, and big cities in the U.S. and in Europe had big fires. And so over time, increasingly, they turned away from wood in construction. I mean, there have been partial bans on wood in construction in New York City, I think, since the early 1700s. And these sort of got codified on a nationwide level in the early 1900s. Apartment buildings had to be made of masonry, concrete, steel, and single-family houses were still made of wood frames. And what finally started happening around mid-century, as people were building apartment complexes, they were increasingly being built out in sort of suburban areas. They were low-slung, smaller things, so they built them with wood frames too. And over time, the housing code has changed in ways that have allowed them to build them up to seven stories is the max.
You can't blame the developer. I mean, you can build cheaper but still charge the same rent as if you were a masonry building, right?
Right. And there's a flexibility to it. It makes it easier to string all the wires and HVAC and everything through the buildings. It's become the default method of residential construction in the U.S., so there are a lot more people who know how to do it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if this construction is so much cheaper in materials and in labor, why haven't developers been using this sooner?
To some extent, it's fads and fashion. To some extent, it's that the building code didn't allow it, really. I mean, these taller buildings, you know, another term for them that I found as I started digging into these was 5-over-1, which it's both an arcane reference to parts of the building code where there's type 5 structures and type 1, but it's also just five stories of wood over one story of concrete. That was pioneered in California in the 1970s because of possibly inadvertent building code changes. I don't know. I mean, it's partly that as sprinklers became widely used, building code officials got comfortable with allowing wood frame buildings to get a little taller. The three different national, regional organizations that were in charge of building codes merged in the late 90s and created a national code, and they basically took the West Coast rules on these apartment buildings, which were more permissive than the rest of the country, and adopted them nationwide. And that became the new rule in the early 2000s, what happened after that is kind of a boom in construction in cities. I mean, Detroit is one of the most dramatic examples of that, inner city where there hadn't been new residential construction in a really long time, suddenly has a lot of it, and now there was this ability to do it in this new way.
Let's talk about the environmental impact, because wood, at least, is renewable. Manufacturing, concrete, masonry, they're big producers of carbon dioxide, which, of course, is a greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. That would seem to be an advantage as well. Is that contributing to the popularity of this shift in how we construct apartment buildings?
I mean, it's definitely something that both the wood products industry and the housing industry have been pushing, and I think they're not making it up. I've read a lot of scientific studies that generally agree with this idea that depending on how the forests are managed, what they're replanted with after you chop down the wood to build buildings with it, that it can be much closer to carbon neutral or even carbon positive than other building materials. So yeah, that's part of it, and it's also pushing a sort of worldwide trend towards trying to use different kind of wood construction, which is mainly lots of little pieces of wood glued together to create tall buildings. I think the tallest are now up to about 18 stories. There's one in British Columbia, and there are a couple in Scandinavia that are built that way. But they're different. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about how long glued together wood will stay glued together, but in general, they don't have some of the other, they're less flimsy, I guess you could say, than these lightweight wood frame buildings, which is what we're getting mainly in the U.S.
So I understand that this wood is somehow made of fire-resistant or fireproof, and God knows what chemical that is. Is it still, though, a risk? Because, I mean, we saw Chicago burn down because it was an all-wood building city.
Yeah, I mean, when these buildings are under construction, they're unbelievably flammable, especially out on the West Coast, but really all over. There have been tons of building fires related to these lightweight wood frame apartment buildings. Once they're built, they all have sprinkler systems in there, which is more than most single family houses do. So in that sense, they're reasonably safe. There was still one pretty terrible fire a while back just across the river from New York in a building that had sort of a partial sprinkler system, kind of an earlier version of these, a little shorter, and that burned down. There have been changes in the building code since then. There are definitely a lot of firefighters who were worried about this. They're especially worried that, maybe 30 years down the road when some of these buildings have fallen on hard times and maybe something goes wrong with the sprinkler system, then they're total fire traps. I think once they're done, they're pretty safe.
I got one final question. I mean, this type of construction is cheaper. That does not mean they all have to look the same. How do you explain this exterior aesthetic?
Development in the U.S. is increasingly financed by big institutional investors like pension funds, foundations, stuff like that. And it's still more regional than lots of industries, but it's much more national than it used to be. And I do think, every city in the U.S. that built a lot of housing in the 1920s has a bunch of craftsman-style bungalows. We all think they look magnificent now, but there were people back then complaining about bungalow disease and the sameness of all the new development. So to a certain extent, every kind of new, and McMansions, they all look the same all over the country. So there's a certain kind of tendency of the building industry always to do this.
What do you think about the way they look?
I mean, I like a lot of them. They're more interesting than apartment building. Well, for one thing, in a lot of these cities where I've seen these things going up, there had been no new apartment buildings in a really long time. And the ones from back in the 20s and 30s are pretty cool looking, but most apartments built in the 50 years after that aren't super interesting to look at. And some of these are going to look terrible in 15 years. The color is going to fade and whatever, but there are really cool looking ones. There's one in Boise that I didn't actually see on my trip, but I've seen pictures of since. That's this really creative use of the kind of freedom that this building technique allows. So I don't dislike them as much as most people do, but I will say I live in a city, New York, where there aren't any because they're still not allowed here.
Right.
So maybe it's easy for me to say. I just see them when I'm on vacation or otherwise traveling.
Justin Fox is a columnist with Bloomberg. Good talking to you.
Great being on with you.
Let's turn now to an architect who might be able to tell us more about this new apartment building aesthetic. Kit McCullough is a lecturer at the Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning at the University of Michigan. Kit specializes in urban design and real estate development. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
So why do so many of these new apartment buildings look so similar?
Well, I actually teach a course at the university on real estate development for architects and planners, where we try to answer this very question. And I think a lot of it has to do with the development process. These buildings are formulas, and like most formulas, they're the most efficient response to a set of constraints, zoning codes, building construction, safety codes, and finance all push towards the same design answer to the problem.
But how does that result in big, colorful squares plastered across
the
building?
So then, you know, by the time the architect is brought in, most of the building's already been figured out, the size, the shape, how it's laid out.
So this is the only way an architect can express
exactly.
Themselves.
The architect's job then becomes to put the wrapper on the box. And they try to break up this big box by changing materials or with window placement and size. And so that becomes the design problem.
So when you're designing a building, how does that shape the identity or the culture of a city?
So these design responses do, I think, vary by regions. In the Southwest, you'll see mostly stucco. Fake stucco. In Ann Arbor, there's a sense that the public will be more accepting of a building that's brick. The designs tend to be very staid. In Detroit, Maurice Cox, the director of planning there, has said explicitly that good design is a requirement for development in Detroit. And so, and he's been bringing in national and international architects. So the design there, I think, is of a higher quality.
In your profession, are there a lot of like focus groups or do you base it on interactions with community members or maybe even your students? How do you know what draws them aesthetically to a building or an area of a city for that matter?
Well, we do have this conversation with my students. What parts of Ann Arbor do you like best? And they're all drawn to Carytown.
For folks who are not from Ann Arbor, okay. What is Carytown?
So it's a very mixed district right adjacent to downtown. It's where the farmers market is. There's lots of commercial uses and retail as well as housing. Much of it is a historic district. So the environment's very diverse and a very small scale. It has a much finer grain than what we see downtown where the buildings are bigger and taller.
And even in the retail center there, it's almost unpredictable when you walk in. You kind of have to negotiate how to get around and what shop to find and things like that.
And this is what makes for an interesting urban environment, is when you have lots of entrances and activities, stoops and porches and shop fronts. So I think one thing cities can do with these larger boxy apartment buildings is to require more entrances, require active uses on the ground floor. Don't let parking be part of the streetscape.
A lot of cities are requiring a retail level, and that doesn't always work if it's not densely populated enough. Why should government get involved in a decision like that, I guess is what I would want to ask.
So many cities, Detroit's looking at this, are using what's called a form-based code. It's a zoning code that specifies the design and not the use. Most zoning codes say it has to be retail. The design form-based code says you have to have entrances, you have to have windows, you have to have stoops or porches, and they can be residential, they can be retail. You can't have parking garages on the street. They have to be underground or behind the building. And so this, I think, is a way to make a better designed, more active and human-scaled environment.
Why in Europe do the buildings all kind of look the same, but people still find them really pleasing, aesthetically pleasing?
In Paris, they're big, boxy, blocky buildings. They all look alike and no one complains. It's a beautiful urban environment. And I think that goes to the scale of design. So again, these buildings have lots of entrances, active uses on the ground floor, cafes. They also have design at the level of detail. So the windows are beautifully detailed. The materials are beautifully detailed, very nice materials. They're not fake stucco. You know, they were built in an era when building construction was much different and was a much bigger investment.
We talked a little earlier with the other guest about this shift from concrete block structures to wood structures. Are there any concerns? Do you have any concerns in using this material?
No, and again, that also comes from building codes. The most affordable way to build a building is with lightweight stick construction. So it's a way to keep building costs down.
Is this apartment building aesthetic that we're seeing right now, again, with these big colorful squares, that's not the only thing they do, but that's the one that we see a lot around here. Is this going to be one of those 10-year trends, or will those big colorful squares on apartment buildings stick around for a while longer?
I don't think the need for apartments is going to go away. I do think there's innovation in construction methods. So we're going to see more fabricated, manufactured building components. I think this will change the aesthetics of buildings in the future.
So what do you think of this trend? I mean, do you like it? Do your students like it?
I would say the design is uninspired and
Uninspired.
Yeah,
you said.
And
okay.
I actually teach a design studio where I try to push the students to break out of the formula, to push the formula within the existing constraints of finance and building codes, but to come up with a better response. But it's difficult. It really is the most efficient way to provide housing in our downtowns. And I would say, for the most part, that is a good thing. We have more people living in downtown Ann Arbor. This is good. We have more people who are living close to our major job centers so they can walk to work. We have more people supporting retail downtown. We need to provide more housing, and we need to provide apartments, because most of the population now are young singles or empty nesters. And so we need housing for that demographic. And this is a way to provide it.
Kit McCullough is a lecturer at the Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning at the University of Michigan. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went